Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 173 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her revenge. Yeah, you heard me. Oh my gosh, this is going to be such a great show. Before we begin, just know this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after we do this wonderful episode to rate and review the show, because we sit here all ears waiting for your feedback. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So I'm reading this piece in the New York Times, and it's how to turn toxic emotions into positive actions. It's all about revenge. And it starts out with, so you've been wronged, a friend casually dismissed a goal you set for yourself, or a colleague threw you under the bus and you feel hurt and angry. Maybe you even want payback. Sometimes those negative feelings dissipate over time, but others fester and become toxic obsessions. Oh, yeah, they do. So another piece is, while these inclinations of anger and revenge are understandable, that doesn't mean they'll do us any good. In reality, they're more likely to make us feel worse. That feeling of motivation to get even can tether you to the past in a way that overshadows any potential positive outcome motivation might bring. So says our guest, Dr. Meredith Thompson, who is associate professor in the Department of Management at Utah State University's John M. Huntsman School of Business. Now, she co-authored a really wonderful paper called We All Seek Revenge, The Role of Honesty, Humility in Reactions to Incivility. Oh boy. Meredith, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I read your entire study, which you were kind enough to send me. And in this study, you really look at this whole issue of incivility, and you look at this personality trait of honesty hyphen humility. Tell me, what got you started on this in the first place? What got you so interested in this?
Well, a lot of my background in research is looking at what we might call toxic workplace behaviors. So incivility is one of them. Having an abusive supervisor is another. Issues of sexual harassment. And one thing you kind of see anecdotally and also just in academic research is that when people feel like they've been mistreated, it does tend to lead to revenge. And some people act on it, some people don't. And so our study was trying to drill down to, okay, you know, do some people really act on those thoughts of revenge and others don't? Or, you know, could people be acting on those thoughts of revenge, but you can't really see it? They're doing it in a, what we call a more covert way. They're kind of flying under the radar, but they're still kind of fulfilling that desire for revenge. They're just doing it in a little bit understated or sly way is one way you might look at it. So we were interested
mm-hmm.
in
and, you know, I think that everyone, well, I think anyone out there understands this concept, because we've all been there, done that. And we have this
right.
moment where we have to think about, like, what are we really going to do? Yeah, you've been thrown under the bus. Somebody sabotaged you. I don't know. Whatever the issue may be. Now, you paired humility, right? And you also looked at honesty. Why did you pair those two together? Why not look at one or the other? What was going on when you put the personality trait together? Because this was really key to your study.
Sure. Actually, the pairing of those two was done by previous researchers trying to get at kind of a missing element in kind of a five-factor model of personality. And so a lot of researchers through their work had said, you know, there's something else that we're missing when we study personality. And so our thinking, I think we were really more interested in the humility aspect of that measure of personality. But the honesty comes, you know, in there sometimes too. And so the two of them together, I wish I could take credit for us pairing those, but it was somebody else's work prior to our research. But we really thought that humility would play a role in what type of revenge people might seek, or whether they did at all. We really weren't sure what we would find, you know, if there were going to be some people who were higher in this honesty, humility, personality factor. You know, maybe they would just kind of suck it up and not act on those that desire for revenge or revenge thoughts. And so we were really curious about how that piece, and it's an understudied, it's a rather new kind of lens through which people look at personality. And so that was also interesting to us. Here's something new that has not been studied in workplaces very much. And so we thought pairing that with as a response to incivility at work, being the target of somebody being rude at work, would be give us some more insight about, you know, how do people seek revenge, or when do they? Was another question we were trying to answer.
So in your study from the abstract, you said, mm-hmm. using data from two points in time, we found that honesty, humility moderated the relationships such that respondents who were lower in honesty, humility were more likely to engage in overt revenge due to coworker incivility, whereas those who were higher in honesty, humility took a different path and demonstrated right. the propensity to engage in covert revenge by reducing their engagement in organizational citizenship behaviors. Explain what happened there.
Sure. This was kind of fascinating what we found. So if someone reported, and this is self-report, so, you know, most of us, I think, like to think of ourselves as good people, but people who reported being higher in honesty and humility, that personality trait, were more likely to seek revenge on somebody who targeted them with rudeness at work by reducing their helping behaviors to that colleague at work. So you're rude to me. Okay, I'm not going to, you know, go out and be rude back to you. Like, those who were lower in honesty and humility were much more likely to act on revenge cognitions by saying, being similarly rude back to somebody at work, or saying something hurtful, or you know, kind of lashing out. But those who were higher in honesty and humility were much more likely to just say, you know what, I'm not going to be ugly back to you. But that last week when, you know, I stayed late to help you with that report, or I helped you, you know, in some other form or fashion at work, I'm not doing that anymore because you were rude, and, you know, I'm not going to be rude back, but, you know, I'm withdrawing those helping behaviors. So that was kind of the distinction. Both those high and low in humility and honesty sought revenge. It just depended on whether they lashed out or they withdrew helpful behaviors at work.
Interesting. And then you also said in this New York Times piece, if somebody tries to take revenge and have a more future-oriented approach, that kind of thinking tends to orient the person to the future and can make them stronger, happier, and healthier. What does that mean? Give us an example, for instance.
Well, I'll give you an example that may be a little risky, but I'll give you a personal example. Quite a number of years ago, something happened in kind of a work educational context where I felt like people involved kind of underestimated me and withdrew some resources because they underestimated me and didn't have faith. And it frustrated me greatly, especially with withdrawing of resources, because that had an impact. And so since that time, I've kind of had this motto, underestimate me, I dare you. So I didn't really hold it against them. They were doing, I guess, you know, what they thought was best. But it really fueled my productivity at work and in a certain domain, and I think is played a significant role in the success that I've had since then, because I wasn't even so much looking back at, I'm going to show you. Part of it was I wanted to show me, you know, I can do this, and I'm going to show myself. And, you know, to some degree, I'm sure it was I'm going to show them and prove myself. So, you know, personally, I took that forward-looking, okay, how can I go be successful So it wasn't lashing out at them, trying to hurt them. It was trying to make me better, which, you know, then kind of has this ripple effect to the rest of someone's life. You know, very often when something is going well for us at work, that can have a ripple effect to our family. I study a lot of how our work and non-work lives affect one another, and we see that. And we see that, you know, in life outside of work. If things are going well at home, sometimes that will have a ripple effect to work or, you know, to community involvement. Or I'm doing some research right now on fitness athletes and people who engage in fitness behaviors, you know, train for marathons or an Ironman or, you know, play on a club softball team. That engagement in other areas of our life when it's going well tends to have this ripple effect to other areas. And I would argue that, you know, in looking back, it works that way for me, at least. You know, that's a sample size of one, but that was my experience.
So a cohort of just one was absolutely perfect and very, very powerful. I'm reading in the New York Times from that piece that the American figure skater Adam Rippon said he wouldn't have made it to the Winter Olympics without his haters. The reality star and nascent denim entrepreneur Khloe Kardashian created an entire TV show around the revenge body, wherein someone undergoes a makeover, usually dropping a load of weight, in retaliation against an enemy, bully, or erstwhile romantic partner. I love this stuff. I mean, this is all of that. Go ahead, underestimate me. I dare you. You know, along that same thing. Do you see where that's going, Meredith?
I do. You know, I think a lot of it is, it's something that we use to kind of inspire ourselves. So instead of focusing on the past and on the person who, you know, threw us under the bus or brought us harm in some form or fashion, even if they would, you know, disagree that they brought us harm, I see it as an opportunity to kind of inspire ourselves. And to me, this is also where that, you know, Khloe Kardashian and the other examples you gave, those people, when they do succeed and improve themselves, whatever that looks like and whatever, you know, life role that's in, a lot of times they don't even just inspire themselves, they inspire other people, which I think is kind of this part of that really lovely, beautiful, I would argue, ripple effect that a lot of people don't even realize they have on other people, that we inspire plenty of people around us, and we may not even be aware of it, but to take, you know, a negative situation and a negative outcome and try and focus on the future, not just for ourselves, but, you know, for oftentimes people within our circle, whether it's, you know, our kids or our significant other or coworkers, the world, yeah, I think would be a much more hospitable place if we could all kind of ingrain that thinking in our minds.
So I bet a bunch of people out there are wondering what the heck their honesty, humility, you know, own assessment looks like. How could they do that? How can they check their honesty, humility, you know, levels and to do, maybe even to improve themselves?
Oh, that is a really great question. Well, I think, you know, on one hand, and you know, to some degree, this would depend on who you ask, you know, whether it's a nature or nurture. Personality by most, researchers who research personality see personality as fairly stable across someone's life. I can tell you I'm much more extroverted now than when I was much younger, so I think that part of my personality has kind of evolved. I think, you know, for a lot of people, if they want to kind of assess that, I'll be frank, I'm sure there's probably like an online assessment that people can do, probably several of them out there. The one I use is basically geared towards academics. It's 8 items that you kind of respond to on, like, from 1 to 5, strongly agree or strongly disagree. So it's very academic in nature. But I think if people are curious or recognize maybe that's something they struggle with, or they want to be, you know, at the top 10% among people in honesty and humility, is to kind of talk to people that are close to them that will give them shoot straight with them, you know, ask them, you know, how do I come across? You know, can you think of a time when I did or said something and you thought, you know, is this person being honest with me? Or a time that I did or said something that came across as me not being very humble or me being really egotistical? You know, hopefully all of us have at least a handful of people like that in our lives who will shoot straight with us and you know, hopefully do it in a constructive and loving manner and be more willing to do it because we're asking them. I think if we, look for those people in our lives, that's one opportunity to kind of get also an assessment, a real world assessment, where we're, it's hopefully a little less likely to be sugar-coated, and then learn, you know, okay, how did I come across? Because, you know, maybe we're also coming across as maybe a little less honest and a little less humble, and, you know, we're not even aware of it. And, you know, then I think there are probably other times where people will say, yeah, why should I be humble? I'm really awesome. Or lying works for me, and so I'm going to keep doing it. But, searching out those people who will give us the truth about ourselves that maybe we're either less aware of or we like to ignore, I think is key to our personal development as people.
I love that. I love that whole issue of feedback. And to take some trusted people in your life and just ask them, you know, straight up, am I someone who really exhibits higher levels of honesty and humility, or what do I really need to work on? And what I usually love to tell people is just please make certain that whomever you're talking to, tell them this: I just parked my ego at the door, so don't worry. Mm-hmm. Just let it rip.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, it's a judgment-free zone. Just tell me the truth, you know, and then you kind of go from there. There was one piece that I really loved, sort of an interesting sentence from that New York Times piece. It was, moreover, letting go of toxic feelings can give you an added bonus of making you feel powerful. Not by exerting power over someone else, but power over yourself. It's almost like reining yourself in. And I think that, you know, you're clearly a psychologist, and you're the expert. I mean, just walking around harboring toxic feelings, poisonous feelings, you know, when things happen to you in life that are pretty funky. Clearly, you know, and I know, and now all of our listeners know that when you do that, you basically have chronic elevations in stress hormone, which is probably one of the worst things you can do to your mind and body and your cells.
Right.
And it's just, it's all bad. There's nothing good that comes out of that. Letting go, even going to the wild place, forgiveness, but really trying to elevate yourself with grace and elegance over whatever's happening, and also being strategic, taking care of your own survival, but in a way that's non-toxic. I think all those things are pieces of the lesson that your wonderful research, as well as this article and others that are starting to come out about this, have really gifted all of us with. So when we look at all this, does that make sense? And give us some feeling of an actionable item you might want to suggest to people listening right now, saying, I wonder. So the first one is to get feedback from people and really listen in. What else could someone do?
Well, I remembered an article in the Harvard Business Review. It's from a couple of months ago. It's from March 15th, but I think it is very apropos to what we're talking about in this issue of revenge. And the article is called "To Control Your Life, Control What You Pay Attention To." And I think that's really fundamental to what we're talking about, is when our attention is focused on the past and that person that I want to seek revenge on and that person who hurt me, we're letting that control us. We're letting it control our emotions. We're letting it control our minds, and I would say also our actions, because very often our emotions and our thoughts drive our behaviors and our actions. And so I think there is really something fundamental to our health and happiness in life and forward progression and self-development to really control what we pay attention to. And that can be our thoughts. You know, what am I going to think on today? I also do some research with how being tethered to work by our mobile phone kind of affects our family life and especially our spouse or significant other. And, it can also be things like that. Actually, you know, who am I going to pay attention to? It's the thoughts, it's the emotion, it's, you know, a mobile device, it's a relationship. What we put attention, and thus I would say effort to, that is what is going to control us. So I think one kind of action item is for people to just, you know, whether they do it on a schedule every day or, at the end of the day or beginning of the day, what have I paid attention to today? Or what am I paying attention to right now? And really, too, when those negative emotions and negative thoughts come up, kind of recognize them in the moment. That's kind of part of that mindfulness training is, what am I thinking on? What am I feeling? Noting it, and then kind of switching back to, you know, what we should be focusing on or what's healthy for us. Not saying that that is easy. I think it takes a lot of discipline and effort. Controlling what we pay attention to, because whatever we pay attention to controls us, controls our lives. That can be a great thing, or it can be a tricky thing that undermines our work, our parenting, our relationships.
Oh, I think that is just a beautiful way to end this episode. A lot of wisdom there. And most importantly, a couple of really excellent deliverables that we can, you know, do as actionable items right now. Get that feedback, which is so terribly important. And at the same time, what are you really paying attention to? You stuck in the past? Are you being mindful in the present? Are you paying attention? And then are you also strategically thinking about the future? Such great ideas. Thank you so much. We've been talking to Dr. Meredith Thompson, who is Associate Professor in the Management Department and Associate Dean of Academic Affairs at the John M. Huntsman School of Business at Utah State University. Thank you so much. And everyone out there, right now, take a moment, run on over to iTunes and rate and review this episode, because I want to hear your feedback. This was an excellent episode with great, chewy, digestible mental bites for you to be able to absorb and then put into practical use in your own life. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.